heard the recorded history of Bataan. So, gentlemen, Rod, would you join me here, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Which seat are we in?
How about this one right here for you, Rod?
Okay. Sounds good.
Does that put you in, or would you rather be here in the shade?
No.
Okay.
I'm fine.
All right. Steve, if you'll sit next to Rod, and we'll put Stuart on the end.
Okay.
That's a good place for you, isn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, I am honored to be here with these three gentlemen, Rod Lewis, Steve Hinton, and Stuart Dawson. They represent the Warbird community and the professionals, the dedicated people who have done so much for all of the Warbird aircraft, and now we have this Bataan. So, Rod, tell me, what possessed you to think that you wanted to restore something of this major undertaking?
You know, Connie, I'm honored here, first of all, to be here with my teammates to represent, you know, our airplane that's supposed to be here, should be here tomorrow, and your namesake. But I think what I asked that question many times, actually. What possessed me to do this? I think it started probably in 2012. Steve and I made a trip over to the Ukraine, and we were looking for a large project. And in this case, it was a Tu-95 Bear. And we went over there, checked it out. It was nothing like we were told. Hadn't been flown in 10 years. We were told it was started up every 3 months. And so we got pretty discouraged after that, came home, and I asked Steve, what can we do that's a big project that we can enjoy as we get older and we can fly as a crew? And Steve came up with an idea that at his museum in Arizona that they had a Connie. So it just started from there, and Steve, you can pick it up and
that
explain
is a
little
big,
more.
That is a big project. and let me do just a little production here. If you guys would like to be in the shade, you could move your chairs up just a little bit if you'd like, and you'll be in the shadow of this beautiful Corsair that also happens to belong to Rod Lewis. But that just keeps you guys out of the sun a little
better.
Bit. So
that makes a difference.
Much better, huh?
You okay?
Okay. Well, Rod's just going to leave you guys over there completely. Yeah. So, okay, so Steve. Okay, so Steve, tell us about the project, the beginning with Ed Maloney, with his vision was amazing.
Well, it's kind of a funny story. You know, for the air race game, we're friends with the Wiley Sanders Group out of Troy, Alabama there. And one day I got a phone call at the shop that from his guys said, you know what, Fort Rucker has this Constellation sitting there. And you know, it's probably available if you guys want it. You know, you're a museum and all, and we know you. So I said, no, I don't think so. I mean, we're strapped just taking care of what we have. But anyway, I mentioned it to Ed Maloney the next day, and Ed just, like, he stood up and said, really? He said, we got to get that airplane tonight. It's like, well, Ed, we can't afford to put that together. He says, we'll find a way. So anyway, against... I wasn't, you know, too convincing to talk him out of it, but God bless Ed for that, and that's what we did, and it turned out it kind of unfolded because as we made a trade for it and we got it, and it just happened to be a retired vice president from Lockheed who lived in Ontario, California, north of Chino, heard that we had it, and he was actually a crew chief on the airplane when MacArthur had it, and so he, through his connections at Lockheed, organized some restoration, and we flew to Dothan. Well, we sent our guys there for about 5 or 6 months to get it flying. It hadn't flown in almost 20 years. And put a crew together and flew it over to Dothan, and Dothan stripped all the NASA paint off of it and put in MacArthur's markings, and then it went to Addison, Texas, and they put an interior, a replica of the MacArthur interior in it, and then came to Chino. We operated it for several air shows, but it just was very evident we could either fly the Connie or fly about 10 or 12 of the other airplanes. You know, that's what it would take to really maintain it correctly. So we ended up taking it out to our museum out in Arizona and put it on display. You know, it's a desert's a good place for an airplane like that, and then right on the highway and all. And then, like Rod had mentioned, our conversations, and we, you know, an aviation museum that we are, you know, we don't have excess funds, but Rod seemed kind of interested, and Rod went and looked at it, and we figured, well, it'd be worth our time, and Rod said he was willing to commit to it. And Rod is the hero in all this airplane, by the way. We did the work, but Rod was the one who stuck it out. You imagine funding a restoration shop for 8 years doing a Constellation, and it's you know, we went through the whole airplane. We, you know, rewired it. Well, we took everything out of it first. You know, we had the outer wings off, we had the landing gear out of it, we had all the engines off, and went through an 8-year process getting it all back together, and real happy with where we are right now. So it, we're anxious to get it here so you can all see it.
Well, it's certainly from the pictures, I know everyone is really looking forward to seeing it, because it is beautiful. Stuart, you have the pleasure of flying it. So tell us a little bit. I know you fly a lot of airplanes. So how does the Bataan compare?
Well,
or does it?
I flew a lot of 4-engine stuff hauling freight early in my life. And but I never had a hold of a Connie, and it is amazing what that airplane will do. It really will get on down the road. It runs fast. It's a little bit heavy to fly, but that's hydraulics from the 40s. You know, that's the way it was.
I believe the airplane, speaking of fast, I believe it set a few speed records in its day, and it really is ahead of its time as far as when it was designed and when it was used.
Yeah. This thing, if you fill it up, you can run 20 hours on it.
I don't think we don't sign me up, right?
And you really don't want to fill it up.
No,
you don't want to pay that bill.
No, I don't want to pay that bill either. You know, I don't know that anybody would. So, Rod, tell me. I mean, I know you're disappointed the airplane is not here today, but it will be here tomorrow. They had a little hiccup. I think Bernie called that a hiccup earlier today in one of their airplanes. So you do have hiccups with these old airplanes. So you have to be extremely proud that this project has come to fruition.
Well, thank you. It's not complete yet. As mentioned in the video, we don't have a complete interior, but as soon as the interior gets finished, it should be a really, really nice airplane. It is already. And proof of that it does fly, a video. So,
yeah, video.
So we've got, first of all, I'm not the hero. These guys that worked 8.5 years, we worked 8 months just to get it airworthy, to fly it from Arizona to Chino. And those guys were super dedicated every day working on this airplane. Got it to Chino, and then eight years later, we June 20th, we finally got to fly it for the first time. I was in a chase plane, and a lot of those videos were from that day. But I'm very proud of mainly the team that's put this all together, and them sticking with it, because it was there were some hard times, especially during COVID. Couldn't get parts, couldn't get people. You know, it was just very tough, and it went right through COVID. Steve did all he could to just keep it running, you know. So I want to thank them.
Well, yeah,
and
you know,
guys.
We should all, you know, any of us who fly airplanes, we don't recognize the crew chiefs and the maintenance people often enough, but they're the guys that keep us going. And, of course, Steve does all of it with his team. How many people do you have working there in Chino, or do you know?
It goes on. We always have around 10 to 14, kind of, right? But we had at times we had 14 people working on this, you could imagine. You know, when you drill skins off and you're removing parts and cleaning parts and looking for parts, and it really goes on and on and on. Vintage radials, excuse me. Mike Nixon did the engines for us. And they're a hybrid engine. They used the power case and nose case off of the latest turbo compounded 3350 and put it on the early blower so it all fit in the same cowling and the same engine mount. And, you know, we just have a lot of experience through the years, and we found ways to make it happen. We modified the electrical system. You can imagine the 1950s electrical system. There were wires, I mean 1,000 pounds of wires going through that thing, you know, because it was pressurized and heated and air conditioned and of that era. And we made it more like a warbird. We want to make it as simple as we could so we can maintain it. So it's we're real proud of what we've done. And when you see it, you'll agree it's a really, really nice detailed airplane. And another thing too, we got to match the rest of Rod's airplanes. You know, Rod, every one of Rod's planes is a gem, and we just want to make sure that we keep that.
Well, there's for Rod.
Well, you're right. You have a high standard here with the Lewis collection to live up to. That's so. If I understood you correctly, these engines are for this airplane. They are specific to this constellation.
Yeah, but I mean, they're the parts that are available, and it's not a major change in any way. The same. We use the reduced power settings that were assigned to that earlier engine. It's still a 2,500 horsepower engine, but the parts are a 3,500 horsepower engine. So they're the very latest evolution of that Wright Cyclone 3350. And Vintage Radials has the largest inventory of that. Part of our deal with him is he would use as many new parts as he could. And most of the engines have all new, you know, cranks, rods, cylinders, and cases. They're like new stuff. It really is. And it... It's really clean. It doesn't drip much oil. We're used to working with 3350s on Sky Raiders that are always oily and spitting everywhere. You see in the video there, when it starts up, it looks kind of like it just spits smoke out. It doesn't even spit oil out. We're really impressed with it, yeah.
Well, that's cool. As you say, radials, if it has any oil in it, you're going to see some of that oil coming out.
It's got 50-gallon oil tanks.
You better see some out. It better come out.
Okay, Stu, tell us again your impression of the engines, the operation of the airplane. So what's different about operating this airplane, say, than a single-engine airplane with this basic same engine?
Well, we've got four of them to take care of.
Yeah, all right.
And it takes three people to fly this airplane, a pilot, co-pilot, and then you've got an engineer. And the engineer basically operates everything. You start and initiate what we're doing, like takeoff power, and he sets it. And anything you want and you need, you just tell the engineer, and they'll do it. So it's really, you got to get coordinated. Everybody's got to work together on this thing.
Well, that's what it's very important. You call for the power and the
you
engineer.
You call for what you want, and he will give it to you.
So is your engineer, no, I'm sure your engineer is still over with the airplane, probably.
Yeah, he's still with the airplane.
So we can say thank you to him, because he's probably the most important part of this.
They're working real hard.
Yeah, that's really good. Steve, would you make a shout out to anyone else here in the audience or any of your crew who made this possible? What was a high point and a low point in this 8-year restoration?
Well, when you say a high point, well, when Stu and I shoved the throttles up for takeoff and we both looked at each other, boy, this thing goes. We, you know, it hit 100 knots and 1,500 feet. We were kind of, okay, let's go, you know. It was really surprising, but we were 50,000 pounds below gross weight, so that's part of it. But that was probably the high point of the whole thing coming together and we finally flying the airplane. And like Rod said, the low point during the COVID years, everybody's struggling we were down about it, but we all stuck with it. And we had so much enthusiasm with the people that we were doing business with. You know, everybody's excited about being involved with the constellation. So,
yeah. Sure, and it is gorgeous. So, who polished this airplane?
There was a company that was hired to do it, and they polished. There was 9 people on it for 8 weeks, it was done there at Chino, and they made a big, giant mess. It was just that fuzz going everywhere. But then they were every day black face, you know, from all the polish. But they were smiling, you know. Everybody loved working on it. It really did.
Well, yeah, that's a big, I mean, you can polish a prop and be worn out, you know, if you're one individual, so I can see why you hire somebody.
Yeah, when
so,
Rod came up with a paint job, he's got, oh, polish, ooh, ooh. But I'm glad he did because it really makes the airplane. It's beautiful.
Okay, Rod, tell us, I mean, we covered a lot of the history of the airplane in the video, but tell us what part of the history means the most to you or led you to make sure you replicated the MacArthur years.
I think just basically that it was MacArthur's kind of office in the sky, you know, and it flew to many different important areas of the world, and I think that's, I just wanted to make sure that we were representing MacArthur properly, and just wanted it just like it was or better. So.
Well, and that's what, you know, we do here in War Birds and Review. It's history, heritage, and the heroes. Yeah. And you certainly helped us on many occasions to present that and record this for generations to come so that they'll know what these airplanes did and what they meant. So tell me a little bit about this airplane while we have it sitting here. We don't want to just ignore it. I mean, it's pretty nice, too.
You know? Well, thank you. Yeah, it's one of the first Warbirds that I bought. I think I had to buy this to get a Bearcat. So I bought a Dash 1 Bearcat with this probably in, it was 20 years ago. So I'd always wanted a Corsair, always wanted a Bearcat, so the package deal was just perfect.
Perfect. So what was your first Warbird?
First Warbird was actually a T-28C. And I flew that for many years, bought that in 1994 and brought it to Oshkosh, did some work on it, brought it to Oshkosh, and it won best T-28 in 1995. And then my second Warbird was a Whirlaway to get some tail wheel time. And that was a beautiful airplane. George Baker out of Florida built that one. And just loved flying that, and then kind of my next one was an NA-50, and then I guess the following was a Mustang. Then I finally got to a Mustang, so.
Okay, Stuart, what was the first Warbird, or what was the first airplane that you flew at what age?
I went to the airport when I was 16 because I had to have a job. I couldn't put gas in my car, and I never left. I just stayed there, and I worked there doing the line and fueling airplanes and learned how to fly and just never went up, you know, never stopped.
You never grew up.
Never grew up.
That's a good thing.
Don't want to.
Yeah. Steve, you know, we've heard over the years the Chino boys or the Ed Maloney guys. Tell me a little bit about the history of Chino and Ed Maloney and you guys that worked as line boys, I understand, out there.
Oh, well, I actually started way before that. We were just, you know, when I was in second grade, when the nun left I tell everybody, when the nun leaves, right, you go in the chalkboard and you start drawing airplanes, right? But there was a kid on the third row over from me that could draw better airplanes than I could. And that was Jim Maloney. That was Ed's son and my wife's father. So, and at a young age, I just had the opportunity. Ed opened the door for Jim and I to, you know, be part of the museum. And, you know, when you're 8 or 9 years old and hanging around the museum, all you're doing is, you know, causing problems for the people that are serious about it. But you grow up and a lot of great mentors. I actually got a late start flying. I was 15 the first time I ever left the airplane, but like 3-4 years later, I found a Mustang. So, and the first time I came to Oshkosh was 50 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, I brought P-51 here, Leroy Pennell's Mustang, and then Jim was flying the museum's Hellcat, so.
I'm not going to count.
1973.
Well, you're, yeah. That's pretty impressive. And you've been here
majority of the times, yeah.
Majority of the times.
Well, first time I ever got paid to fly an airplane, I got flying an F-86 for Bob Hoover. In 1974, I brought an F-86er. Yeah, that white one with the red stripe. If you ever see an old picture with a kid that working on it, that was me.
All right. Right. Well, Bob Hoover was a mentor for a lot of people and had a lot of good words of wisdom. And you know, it was really neat to know some of these people. And that's what we're glad we've preserved, you know, their history and their stories here. And now we carry on with the airplanes. And tomorrow you have to see a lot of the Corsairs out here. I asked Rod earlier. I don't know. The question was kind of like, why is the Corsair here? And he said, because you asked me to bring it. You know. So okay. So what can we look for next year, Rod? I don't know how you top a Constellation.
Well, next year we'll have a full blown completed Connie. First of all.
Yeah, with interior.
Yeah, with an interior in it, with 24 seats actually. So, I don't know. Depends on what you're doing next year and what you need. So.
What I asked for. I have to be careful what you
right.
ask for here. Okay, so this is going to be a shorter than normal Warbridge Review because it is the afternoon, and they're going to start the night show here in just a little while. But would you guys be open to offering it out for questions if we have anybody who
sure.
Has a question out there?
Sure.
We can we take this. I don't know if that I have my mic handlers yet, but maybe if you raise your hand, I can walk over and there you go, a close one. That's good. Okay.
Is there a time for it to arrive tomorrow?
Is there a time for it to arrive tomorrow?
Hopefully, it's going to be in the morning. We're waiting and coordinating this with the people where the aircraft is now, but it's up and. We're going to get over as quick as we can to get it back here.
Okay, this gentleman.
I'm a young warbird buff. I love it. And how do you recommend a young person get into warbirds?
Steve, you're probably the one.
You got to make yourself available. And okay, you start at the bottom. I mean, you meet people and offer to help and, you know, find somebody you're comfortable with, some group you're comfortable with. It's a... Yeah, there's a lot of great people right here in this audience, too. You could probably make a nuisance of yourself and get in somehow.
Okay. Is this mic live? Okay. Yes, I was going to ask that in the movie The Aviator, they happened to have the Connie that and they were talking about having the berths. And so I wanted to know, is it going to be buttons or snaps?
Don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, and while we're waiting for the next question, I think we recognize Steve. In the morning, we're going to have Adam Makos here for devotion with the Corsairs. And Steve had a lot to do with the devotion movie. Tell us, you know, are you planning a movie with a Constellation with the Bataan, you think? Or let's write a script,
that
huh?
Yeah.
Maybe we should.
Sorry.
Maybe we should.
Yeah, maybe we should. Let's do it. Hey, you haven't done that yet, have you? Doing movies.
No, hey, Rod, that's not for me.
Yeah. No, Devotion is a great project. You know, we got a phone call, and Fred Smith from FedEx wanted to come out and talk about Devotion with his two daughters. They have a production company called Black Label. And so Fred shows up with his two daughters. I mean, they're regular company, but anyway, he wanted to talk about doing this movie. He says, it's a great book. And my wife, Karen, had read the book. And she says she was so excited about it because, you know, it's a best-selling book and, you know, it's a great story. Funny part, we talked a little bit in the office and then started. I took Fred and his the people for a tour and went through our first hangar and talked about the airplanes. And Fred Smith, everybody knows who he is, right? FedEx. He's the fellow that started FedEx. Anyway, he looked out there, and we have an OV-1 in the corner outside. Hey, oh, I used to work on those things. Anyway, for the next 45 minutes, he gave the tour at the museum. He knew every airplane we had. I couldn't believe it. He was just talk. Quite a personality. But a year later, Kevin LaRosa Jr., who you probably met, who's a young... aerial director now, and an outstanding person and very accomplished aviator as well. You know, he was assigned as aerial coordinator on the show, and so we sat down and figured out, you know, first of all, what's the budget? You know, it could go on and on. Yeah, you start with several people that are here. We've even talked to them about using their airplanes, but then, of course, they narrow it down. But we ended up with three Corsairs that we used for the whole show. We started in Wenatchee, Washington, Korea. Did a lot of flying there. We were there at the airport for Wenatchee. I think we were there for about 5 weeks, I think. You know, some days it was snowing, couldn't do it. Some days we, you know, it was a nice day, or we just bared down and did it. And we had the Corsairs, and had a Sky Raider from Ericsson. So we had Ericsson's Corsair, Ericsson's Sky Raider. We had our museum, F4U-1, Dan Freakin's F4U-4. And then we brought our MiG-15 up there, too, to do some scenes. And then from there, we went to Pasco, Washington, and did all that stuff. If you watch the movie around the river and the lake, did it there. And then we took a break for a little while and got the Bearcats and Rod Sea Fury. And we went to Savannah with the Corsairs, and we based out of Savannah. And we set up Rod Sea Fury. He has a two-place Sea Fury. Took the instrument panel out of the back and painted the tail blue, and we put the actors in the back of the Sea Fury. And John Maloney and I did the Bearcat scenes. If you see the movie, some of the best Bearcat stuff you'll see. Anyway, we did so much stuff, and of course they only used 5 minutes, but we had a ball. You know, when you're doing a movie, you get to do stuff that's way, you know, kind of usually illegal, but you got a waiver to do. But buzzing the beach and looping and rolling and formation rolls and stuff like that. They used a few little things, but it was a real great experience, and it was great income for the museum. And, you know, all our guys were working on it. It was a great show. And Rod let us take some vacation away from the Connie for a couple months. That was a big deal. But it was a good movie, and unfortunately, it has a really sad ending, but we were real proud of it.
Well, I think we can all be proud of the integrity of the people like, you know, Jesse Brown and Tom Hudner, who are veterans and fly for their buddies. That's what Bud Anderson says. You know, I was flying for my buddies, and a lot of them didn't come home. So to our veterans, we owe a great debt, and to you guys. And I wanted to bring that in for the interaction and the connections of all the Warbird people. I see the Warbird people out here who also operate these airplanes. It's a very close-knit community, and you know, everybody is. Warbirds is a little different because we are here to showcase the airplanes in tribute to all the people who served. And I know we have oh, do I have to go to that question now? Mr. Roush has a question. I'm sorry, you're trumped, Mr. Roush.
I want to make a statement about the museum, my first contact with it. I started drag racing nationally in 76, and the first time I hit the West Coast, I was at Pomona, and they had the Hellcat on the display at the grandstands, which was piqued my interest. And I went looking for the museum after practice one day, and I went to found Chino. And the B-17 was outside. And do you still have the same B-17?
Same one, yeah.
I asked if I could go through it. And the person I was talking to, whose name I never knew, said I could, but I had to leave a $5 contribution for the museum. So I got my $5 down, and he opened up the B-17, and I went through it for about 30 minutes. And really enjoyed my first trip to California. My first visit to an aircraft museum, and my first exposure to Chino. Thanks, guys. You have
Thank
a lot
you.
Of people that come to your community first and wind up in your museum. And if you're still doing what you did in those days, you're making the hits with the people that that are impressed by it.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. Yeah, these museums throughout the country are just so valuable. I see Ron Fagan sitting right there. They have an amazing museum in Granite Falls, as do many of the people here have the aircraft in the museums. And the question there, Mary, I think you have a gentleman that would like to ask a question.
Yes, I have one question. Connie, I think, knows where I'm going to go with this. But and this is directed primarily to Rod, I think, and it's not so much as a question as an observation. And we talked of the mission of the C-121, and the Navy flew it also, of course. And I was privy to watching the film and when it was retired, etc. And I was kind of surprised when they said 1966. I think it was retired from the inventory. And I looked at Connie and I said, well, there's another variant out there that flew a lot longer than that. In fact, in the Navy, it truly flew longer than that. I was stationed in Keflavik Naval Air Station in Iceland, and I was flying Phantoms at the time. And for early warning, what do I see sitting on the ramp but a 121? Of course, it was a little bit different. It had an EC before it, and it had the hump on the back, and it had the dish on the bottom. And that was our early warning. And that was like 1978, I do believe. And a lot of people here don't probably realize that that is truly a warbird version. And it was utilized a great deal in Vietnam also, again, for early warning. And of course, you know, it was replaced by AWACS, and the Navy had some, E2s that were used also. But I think it's important to note that, that truly is a warbird variant, and really it helped me. As a Phantom guy, my radar would only look so far, you know, and then their call sign was Adola. The Adola guys would start talking to us, and they go, hey, and we were intercepting bear bombers at the time, and here are these bear bombers way out there, and they knew it. We didn't, you know. They got us close, and we said, okay, we got it now, and off we went. But yeah, I thank you also for the restoration, for bringing it to note. But I think it is also important that people realize that, hey, this thing with a great big hump on the back and a dish on the bottom really helped out a lot of us fighter pilots all the way through about 1978, I want to say.
Well, that's great to know. Thank you.
And your airplane, it served in Vietnam with transporting people who were a very important part of that. So Rod, did I have another question? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, young man, up top.
First, I just want to say thank you to everyone here and everyone that's not here for bringing the Constellation. That's always been one of those iconic, legendary aircraft that I never thought I'd get a chance to see fly, and looks like tomorrow's going to be that day. So, sorry if I sound like a kid in the candy store, because that's exactly what I am. But to piggyback off the first question, as far as leaving during one of the air shows, is that still planned for Friday, or you're doing Saturday, or is that kind of fluid right now? Because I'm leaving Sunday, so I was hoping to catch it on one of those 2 days.
Are you leaving Friday, or do you know?
Rod can tell you that.
Probably, since we're arriving so late, we're thinking about Saturday departure.
Actually, we're looking for donations to fill it up with fuel.
Exactly.
So, no, I'm kidding.
I
am totally kidding. So along those lines, how much fuel does this airplane hold? I'm talking gallons, not dollars in today's
dollars. 965 gallons.
I'm sorry, I stepped down. You say that?
About $75,000 worth. No, it's 5,900 gallons, yeah.
Yeah, 6,000 gallons.
And you're burning how much per hour?
Well, it depends on where the throttles are, but flying here, we were 100 gallons an hour.
100 gallons an hour.
1,330 horsepower cruise, and it was indicating 250 knots across the ground.
Yeah, we were running 260 sometimes across the ground. Yeah. We were burning 400 to 420 an hour.
Yeah, total, all four.
Total.
Well, it's good to have all four. Not absolutely necessary, but it's good to burn 400 gallons an hour.
Got 50-gallon oil tanks, too, so it can stay up. Yeah.
Actually, I've seen a video where they've shut down three engines, and it'll fly on one engine.
Oh.
Yeah, it's in YouTube. Arthur Godfrey is talking about Super Connie, the most safest airliner in the world, and he goes, watch this. It's like, okay, here it comes.
I hate it when they say, watch this.
Yeah, I know. It's like,
Well, I guarantee you they didn't have very much fuel on board.
Yeah, I guarantee you.
They probably
right over Edwards Air Force Base, too.
they had places to land if they needed to. So, Rod, any closing comments?
Oh, I just want to thank the crew, the guys that aren't here. That was a good point. They're obviously working the hardest. We're over here kind of relaxing for the day anyway. So, but we'll get right back over there in the morning and join them. Want to thank them. Thank you for inviting us and having us here. And you guys have anything to add?
Just like I say, we got some famous people in the audience, and I want to thank you for all you guys do, and thanks
for sure.
And we're going to get the Connie here tomorrow.
Yeah. And Stuart, as the pilot, is there anything I've missed that you think people would be interested in knowing about the airplane?
They just need to come look at this thing. It's really impressive. It is really impressive. If you like airplanes and you don't like the Connie, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who wouldn't like a Connie?
Yeah,
that's right.
You led me into that. That was not planned. guys, Rod, Steve, Stu, thank you. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, it's been my honor, and I thank you for all of you being here late afternoon looking into the sun. But thank you guys so much. This is going to be really special to see you come in tomorrow. You have to let us know what time you're coming, okay?
We'll okay, one more thing. I want to thank my wife for letting me do
Karen.
This. Thanks, honey.
Karen.
She's always patting me on the back. As long as I come home happy, she's happy.
Yeah, it was really her dad that's responsible
Absolutely.
For most
right.
of this, right?
Yeah.
Aviation wives are really understanding.
Well, the first time we left the Chino Pattern and we were buzzed Santa Maria Airport. I don't see Chris. He was here a minute ago. But on the way back, it just slapped myself in the face because I got a tear in my eye thinking about Ed because, you know, I almost argued with him. We don't need this thing, you know. It's like, but here we go. Thanks, Ed. He knew better than me for sure.
He knew more than you did.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yes. Well, to all the crew chiefs and the wives, and I often think, you know, of course, you know, I fly airplanes, so I'm just a little odd here myself. But for the women who support what our passion is, and they don't always know all the terms that you're throwing out there and the enthusiasm that you get to go fly an airplane. But those ladies are very special. And so my hat's off to all of you. And April's up there also. So thank you. And gentlemen, we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Hey. Thank you.